Hi kids, welcome back. It's Talking Honor, the Pro Wrestling Torch podcast dedicated exclusively to Ring of Honor. My name is Harley R. Padgett. I report on Ring of Honor for the Pro Wrestling Torch. I do written reports on television and live events. I co-host this show. I co-host the PW Torch VIP podcast, Elite Repeat, where we look at the old episodes of Being the Elite. And I'm a regular contributor to the Wednesday night PW Torch Livecast, PWT Talks, and XT. I'm here, as always, with Emily Fear.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Harley. How's it going?
Oh, you know.
Just reveling in all of the last night's incredible, exhilarating no DQ, no count out thrills.
Nobody got counted out. Nobody got DQ'd. I found it weird that they kept saying no DQ instead of, they never once said the word disqualified or a variation on disqualify. And I don't know. I just found that funny.
Well, it's how the cool kids, you know, like nothing is, you don't want to be all, you don't want to use the full word for something. You got to use the chill variation.
It should have been no DQ, no CO.
Yeah, exactly. That would have been true cool ROH. Yeah, so you don't even say Ring of Honor anymore. You just say ROH.
Yeah, you say Row.
Yeah.
Like the fans chanting EC Dub during the match.
Yeah. We have to talk about that.
Yes. So, we got a lot to talk about on it. Like, this week's ROH TV was a little full. We had three matches. We got the return of Coleman's Pulpit. We got a backstage segment with the dogs. We had a short little thing with SoCal Uncensored. Lots on this week's TV. Plus, we got an announcement of a brand new wrestling series called JoJo Pro today. Plus, this past weekend, New Japan had a little event over here on American shores, Emily.
Yes, they did. On Saturday night, live from the Cow Palace in San Francisco, was the G1 special, a kind of kickoff of sorts of the annual G1 Climax tournament that'll be officially starting on Saturday, July 14th. So if you live in like the East Coast time zone, you can catch that at 5:30 a.m. And if you live in Pacific Coast or anywhere between 2:30 to 5:30 a.m. if you're in America. If you're in Japan, you know, typical evening times. But so this Saturday on American soil, there was a special event featuring, you know, all your New Japan favorites, including a title match between Kenny Omega, the current IWGP heavyweight champion, and Cody. So we got a Kenny and Cody showdown number two. But before I talk about that one, because that closed out the show and there's some interesting things that happened from that, I will give a shout out to Skrull and Paige, who got a victory over the pairing of Tanahashi and Kushida. The Young Bucks successfully defended their heavyweight tag team title belts against a rematch with Evil and Sonata. And then, of course, we have to talk about Kenny and Cody. You got to see a lot of really interesting features for a New Japan Pro Wrestling match in this one. There were some table spots, as predicted, but there was also a ladder at some point, which is not super typical of New Japan Pro Wrestling. They don't do a ton of ladder work. We see that a lot more often in other promotions, notably ROH has done their fair share of ladder matches. Kenny was actually part of New Japan's first ladder match, so it's always interesting to kind of see how they work that in and who's involved. And in this case, it wasn't a ladder match, obviously, but a ladder spot was involved. Long story short, could talk about this match for a while. It did go on for a little bit. The guys both got their fair share of bumps in, but Kenny Omega walked away victoriously, retaining his title as many predicted he would. But that is not the end of the story. Harley, are you all caught up on the Bullet Club drama?
Yeah, something. There's some gorillas involved, and yes, no, I'm joshing listeners. Yes, there was an uprising, is it an uprising if the person who starts it is the person who's been there the longest?
Well, there's
a downsizing.
There is a surge of some sort. Those who are familiar with the Bullet Club will be familiar with the name Tama Tonga and the Gorillas of Destiny. Tangaloa, his brother, were joined in the G1 special by their father, King Haku. And it was really cool to see the three of them in a 10-man tag match early on in the card. But they reappeared. And as Kenny and the Bucks are celebrating the victory that Kenny had over Cody, who should appear behind them? But Tama Tonga, Tangaloa, and their father, King Haku, who at first seemed to be supportive, but then did, in fact, as Harley said, stage their own form of coup, dragging the guys back to the ringside where they delivered a pretty vicious beatdown. Then all other members of Bullet Club got involved, Hangman trying to come out for the save, and as you would guess, getting taken down pretty quickly. New Japan Bullet Club stalwarts Yujiro and Chase Owens came out, but they were also taken down as well. And then finally, as the Gorillas of Destiny and the senior Gorilla of Destiny were lording their jump attack over the guys, who should appear back in ring, but Cody Rhodes to possibly save the day. But by the end of it, all guys were on the mat except for G.O.D., and this is spelling further turmoil for Bullet Club in the future. So basically, there's a lot of different ways you could define this. This could be Bullet Club East versus Bullet Club West. It could be Bullet Club OG versus Bullet Club New Wave, Bullet Club New Japan versus Bullet Club ROH. I like to think of it as the People's Republic of Bullet Club versus our more hierarchy leadership-based Western Bullet Club, as embodied by this whole Cody and Kenny feud. But however you shake it, things continue to not be fine in the world of Bullet Club as of the end of the New Japan G1 special.
But it is Bullet Club, so they're going to have a heated feud for 2 or 3 months, and then it'll end with everybody hugging and the status quo will be back to normal and nothing will have changed.
That is true. I mean, I don't know exactly how resolutions happen in the world of Tama Tonga. I know that this current reign, Kenny's IWGP Heavyweight Champion reign so far is comprised of 90% more hugging and emotional catharsis than, say, like Okada's reign was. So this is it's been an interesting month of Kenny Omega as New Japan's top guy. But yes, there will inevitably be some redemption. There will be hugging. There will be more betrayal. Who knows? This time, 6 months from now, it could be Skrull, villainously defying them all. Who knows?
And I will say, if you're listening to this and you're not familiar with King Haku, also known as Ming for a period in WWE, just take a little browse of his Wikipedia page, because if you want some fun reading, Haku is generally considered by most wrestling veterans and legends as one of the toughest SOBs in the history of wrestling. So if you just scroll to it, there's like a, I don't know what it's called, but there's a section on his Wikipedia page of testimonials from everyone, from Hogan to Flair to Harley Race to anybody else you can think of, just sharing anecdotes relating to Haku's toughness. And it's amazing. It's so funny. And I can't endorse it enough.
Yeah, he really does carry that reputation with him into New Japan, especially with the G1 special this time around. Like, from the very first match, they were the first match, that 10-man that featured the Gorillas of Destiny and Haku. That was a really impressive presence to have right at the top of the card. And then to see him come back with his, with his sons to deliver this coup was especially sweet. Like, I thought that was a really good use of a veteran who has the kind of legacy, has the kind of reputation that he has. So yeah.
And what do you think? This is building to maybe Haku and G.O.D. versus the Young Bucks and Papa Mossy?
Yes. We already know that Papa Mossy is pretty easy to take down. Like, one super kick gets that guy on the ground pretty quickly. I get this feeling about
Papa
Mossy.
Except when he's dressed up as Santa Claus. Then he's a bit stronger.
I get the feeling with Papa Mossy, he's a lover, not a fighter. Maybe that's because of all of his chill dad dude music that he creates. But I could be wrong. I mean, he might, his sons got their fighting spirit from somewhere. So
time will tell on that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
But while we're talking about ROH-related, but not ROH promotions, there's a special announcement this morning on the social media. It's a brand new series, and they're calling it Dojo Pro. Apparently, it was filmed a short while ago in Nashville, and at the time, it was kind of secret. People didn't really know what this taping was for, but it's been unveiled today. It's a new limited-run TV series called Dojo Pro, available exclusively through Amazon Prime, but only in America and England. So if you are not in America and England, like myself, tough shakes. But for you Americans, for you Brits, it sounds pretty cool. It's, I want to say, a 12-episode series. It features basically a gauntlet-style tournament with the winner eventually earning a shot at the ROH World Television title. And some of these names in this gauntlet tournament, Jeff Cobb, James Storm, Shane Strickland, Colt Cabana's son, MJF. Who else, Emily?
Bad Boy Joey Janela.
There you go. And a bunch of others that were.
Yeah, a bunch of other guys.
But it sounds cool. And we were talking about this before we went in the air. I'm just always fascinated to watch a new wrestling promotion. You know, you start a new wrestling TV show in 2018. I'm really curious to just know how they film this, what it looks like, what the video packages are like, how they introduce us to these wrestlers on this show. All of that the production stuff just always fascinates me at this point, because there's so many different ways to do it. There's the more sports feel, like your New Japan. There's the more cinematic, like Lucha Underground. There's the more Saturday morning cartoon, like WWE. There's so many different approaches to wrestling, and I'm always fascinated by the idea of a new look at professional wrestling.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how this kind of fits into not just like the storylines and, you know, et cetera, the titles for ROH, but how aesthetically it matches it. Like, is it going to be visually linked to ROH in some way? ROH has a style that's not necessarily a super signature style at this point. I think early on, with its more like stripped down approach, it definitely was more signature than, say, the guys like WWE and like the, you know, big federations. But at this point, I don't know if I would classify there to be a particular, you know, signature aesthetic for ROH in the way that like New Japan Pro Wrestling has it, or like Lucha Underground certainly has it. I don't know. You might disagree with me, Harley. Maybe you can pinpoint that like visual aesthetic of ROH a little bit better. But I'm curious to see how Dojo Pro kind of fits within that, because it's so very specifically tied to ROH, because obviously the winner of this tournament is going to get a shot at the TV title. So it's got to have some kind of like, I'm hoping it has a bit more link to ROH other than just like using the name and using this title as an incentive for victory.
Yeah, but it is interesting because I don't have the full roster of the show in front of me right now, but I don't believe any current ROH wrestlers are involved in this tournament. Like, this is kind of some of the best of the indies, right? Strickland and MJF and Cobb and Janela. I don't think any of these people have... I mean, I can't go back far enough to say they've never wrestled in ROH, but certainly not recently.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. See, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007, The Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
So, yeah, I don't know. And, I mean, not clear when the winner gets their title shot for the TV title. The first big opportunity would probably be Death Before Dishonor in September in Las Vegas.
That'd be a good opportunity, right? And fairly high profile because it's a pay-per-view and it's, you know, the next largest event that's going to happen this year. So with Dojo Pro already having, like, filmed all of its episodes, and so obviously the winner's already ready to go, you know, in another month, if they were to announce that sometime mid-August, that the, you know, the winner of this was going to be going on to, that to me makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and we should say it's up on Amazon Prime right now, and they're doing the Netflix approach where the whole season, I guess, is up there right now. So, you know, 12 or 13 half-hour episodes. So, you know, you could watch this in one afternoon if you really wanted to.
Yeah, I'm planning on trying to catch most of it, if not all of it, between now and Saturday when the G1 actually begins. So hopefully between like tomorrow and Friday, I can like watch the bulk of it.
Yeah, and if you do get the chance to finish it before we record next week's episode of this podcast, you can definitely come on and tell us all what you think, because I'm Canadian. I'm not allowed to watch it.
Let the Canadians have their wrestling.
You know, I was thinking recently, I don't even think there's any Canadians on the ROH roster.
Whoa, really?
And that's so weird, because like NXT, WWE are flooded with them. And a few years ago, ROH did. They had Kyle O'Reilly. They had other people, Michael Elgin and others. But at the moment, I don't believe there are.
I mean, it was commented on after Dominion, but for a very brief time, because Elgin actually doesn't have the title, the Never Openweight title anymore. He lost it like a week later back to Goto. But for right after Dominion, three of the biggest titles that they have were held by Canadians. So New Japan Pro Wrestling is doing better with Canadians than ROH is.
Yeah, I think the only Canadians who have been in ROH this year are New Japan guys, like Kenny Omega and DH Smith.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right.
And Super Smash Bros. Made an appearance. But, yeah.
Very curious.
Maybe that's why I've been feeling a little less invested in ROH lately. I don't have my home country guy that I can be rooting for.
Yeah, they're clearly showing a bias against Canadians. I think you're finally feeling that oppression.
It's because it's the summer, right? And you Americans assume that Canada doesn't exist in the summer.
Yes,
we're the land of ice and snow.
Yeah, well, you know what happens to you guys as of June? You disappear for a while, right?
Yeah, we'll be back when the hockey season starts. But anyway, speaking of people not from America, this week's TV main event featured the return of CMLL star Titan. He was facing the American Nightmare Cody we'll call it singles action. It was basically a 3-on-1 handicap match. But it was Cody and Titan with Bernard and Brandy at ringside. I went into this thinking last week's TV main event, Matt Taven and Ultimo Guerrero, was great. I didn't have like big expectations for that one, and it blew me away, and I really loved it. I really enjoyed it. So as a result, I came into this week's TV main event with raised expectations, thinking this week's TV main event would be great, and it'll be really fun, and this could be cool. And it was the opposite. I did not enjoy this. Emily?
Yeah, it was. I probably liked it a little bit more than you did, but I last week I was a little put off by how much TK and then eventually Vinny factored into the finish for the Matt Taven Ultimo Guerrero match. I like that match a lot more than this one. But again, we get this running theme of like our big guys in ROH, our main eventers in ROH, still can't seem to win over these CMLL guys without some kind of interference. And in the case of Cody, that meant we're back to, you know, Brandy and Bernard kind of doing their mischievous Brandy and Bernard thing. Although, okay, I will be totally fair about this since I'm talking about interference. The one part of the match that I thought was maybe my favorite as far as non-wrestling moves.
Bernard getting beheaded?
Bernard being decapitated, yes. But more specifically, Brandy's hilarious, like horrified scream at like seeing the decapitated Bernard head was just pure magnificent performance from Brandy Rhodes there.
And she was carrying the head afterwards.
She was carrying the head afterwards. I feel like that was almost worth all of the like shenanigans that these two come along with.
I didn't think of it at the time until you mentioned it right now, but there was some poetic imagery here. Bernard got beheaded And then the finish came about because Cody ripped off Teton's mask.
Yeah, there was a lot
that's,
of...
That's an eye for an eye.
Yes, very much. I mean, I kind of thought about that after the episode ended, because obviously I don't think anyone listening has to be explained that, like, you know, a masked wrestler being demasked is a huge deal. To me, it was very odd that the finish included that, because I felt like this match almost didn't earn something as major as a mask reveal, as someone being demasked. But then as I thought about it, I was like, well, maybe it's kind of like, well, you took the head off my bear, I'm going to take your like symbolic head off of you. And that made me like a little bit more, but yeah, it felt abrupt to me, which, you know, mask reveals often are, but it almost felt like gratuitous in a way that, like, I don't know, for me, maybe I'm just like out of a weird traditionalist when it comes to demasking, but I almost feel like a demasking of a wrestler is a huge thing and should be a like culminating action in something that's a much, much more intense affair than a main event match that didn't have much on the line.
Yeah. A 10-minute match between two guys who had no bad blood between them going into the match. So I totally get where you're coming from there. And this was another one of these Cody matches where it was a 10-minute match, but we had six shenanigans. I'm keeping count now. I'm keeping count per match. We had Bernard tripping Teton. We had Brandy tripping Teton. We had Cody pulling the referee in front of him as a shield. We had a low blow. We had the canister of hairspray being rolled into the ring. And then we had the unmasking. So that's six in a 10-minute period. That seems excessive to me. And like you were saying, it feels like, you know, this is Teton's, I think, second appearance in ROH this year. So that's an average of, what, one every 3.5 months? He doesn't show up often, and he doesn't... Maybe he's a big star in CML, and I don't realize. But Cody is a big star in ROH. He's one of the top, top guys in Ring of Honor and has one of the best win-loss records this year. So I don't feel like Cody should need six different types of shenanigans in order to beat this guy. I kind of felt like, you know, hey, a crossroads at the 14-minute mark should be all it takes to put him away after a back-and-forth match.
Yeah, I totally agree. I would love to see a Cody TV match or whatever, a Cody main event that maybe was just good fighting, was just, you know, the solid skills that we know he's capable of. Because even, and I, you know, I don't want to harp on the G1 special a lot, but because even that was filled with some shenanigans and a lot of big spots. And obviously Kenny, and any match between Kenny and Cody is going to have a lot of those, you know, bigger, you know, more like high profile stunt type spots. But Cody's really an effective wrestler beyond just the shenanigans, beyond like the performative stuff. I would love to see him have a really good match that just was a, you know, a good 14 minute intense fight, like the one that we know he's capable of, that we have seen in the past. I think about things like there were some shenanigans back in the title match between him and Dalton Castle at Final Battle. But, you know, a lot of that match was just like pure physicality, especially after, you know, their auxiliary people got kicked out. I want to see a main event from Cody that doesn't require this, because I know that he's capable of delivering a really effective match that doesn't have, you know, Bernard, doesn't have Brandy interference, doesn't have, you know, mask reveals or unnecessary tables or ladders or et cetera, et cetera. Like just give us a good match, because he's a dynamic wrestler to watch in that way. And if he's against the right opponent, that opponent stands a lot to gain to be able to hold their own with Cody in the ring that way as well. So it didn't really do much of a service to Teton, doesn't do much of a service to Cody to keep kind of running down the same path of these matches that have kind of the same setups over and over again.
Yeah, if anything, it makes Cody look bad that he has to resort to all of this stuff to beat this guy that we don't really even know anything about. If it had just been Brandy and Bernard interfering a little bit and then Cody wins, sure. But the low blow and the ref and the mask and the hairspray just seems like way too excessive. And it goes, and my other thing is just like, is Cody a heel? Some weeks he is, some weeks he's a babyface, and it's just like, or he's like a shade of gray. It keeps going back and forth, and I don't like it. I don't, maybe I'm a traditionalist too, but I just like, I want him to pick a lane and just stick with it. Cause he's a great performer. He can be a great babyface. He can be a great heel, but you have to be one or the other. Cause you go back and forth every week. I don't know what, who is that benefiting?
Yeah, it's the problem. It's actually kind of a Bullet Club overall problem too. It was kind of striking. I'm going to do it again. It was striking about this turn, this latest turn in the Bullet Club story of people being like, oh, Tama and the, you know, G.O.D., they turned heel. Bullet Club is a heel faction. Did, like, that was their intent. That was the intention all along. They're supposed to be bad guys. Now all these guys, now we've liked them. The audience is just, you know, they've fallen in love with all of them. So it's really hard for them to maintain that. Bullet Club is bad guys. They're heels. They're supposed to be heels. And some of them are really good at being heels, Cody included. And Cody, like, in his repertoire of heel tactics, he's done a lot of, like, you know, dirtier tricks or, like, really – my favorite Cody heel stuff in ring is psychological. It's not, like, the cheating, the interference type stuff. It's, like, the weird cycle, the mind game stuff that he's really effective at selling. You got to see a lot of that this past winter and spring in his, like, build-up to the matches with Kenny. So – he doesn't need all this interference stuff to make him look like the heel. If he's trying to play the heel, he's better at doing, he's actually honestly looks better when he's not doing that stuff. But you're right. He kind of, and this is a problem with a lot of the Bullet Club guys. They don't have a lane, a specific lane. They're kind of in between. They're veering back and forth. We have we have anyone from like Marty, who is a genuine tweener in that, like, he's just so over. It's impossible for him to completely be the heel now, to Cody, who, it is a heel in front of most audiences. Most audiences are still gonna, you know, give him the heat that he's looking for, but he just doesn't always perform that way. And especially in like promos and things, and we're not getting a clear picture of what Cody, what we're supposed to see with Cody.
Yeah, and I mean, okay, his next big match is against Nick Aldis. So who's the, I have no idea who's the hero, who's the villain of that story, or who, I'm guessing we're supposed to be rooting for Cody because he's trying to capture this title that his father held, and he's supposed to, and Nick Aldis, I don't think is likable. I don't follow NWA well enough to know what Aldis's character is like.
I don't know either, but also this match is happening at All In. And it's happening.
Cody's show.
It's Cody's show. Like, this is a dream. Like, we're getting a whole mythology built around it now with Cody and the Bucks, like, creating their own, like, little, like, web series around All In. Not only do we understand how, like, you know, tremendous of an achievement this is and, like, a dream project of theirs, but, like, we're getting sold it as, like, a narrative package now to the point where, like, who's going to go into All In and root against Cody to win in that fight when it's Cody's show, it's Cody's dream, it's, like, this dream project, like, we're all there in that room celebrating this form of wrestling because of Cody and the Bucks. Like, are any of us going in there rooting? Like, I like to root against Cody, and I probably can't in this case. So, like, he's definitely going in as a face for All In. There's, unless they really manage to work it some way, I can't imagine that he's gonna be anything else but the hero in this story.
So we're less than 2 months away. So why are we trying to get him booed against someone like Teton on ROH television at this point? That just seems so pointless.
Yeah, but it's because the storyline, because they're different storylines, I think, in some respects, even though, you know,
I don't like that either.
Yeah, I don't know, because it doesn't actually really work, because right, Nick Aldis, you know, made it clear that he wanted a challenge for the ROH world title if Cody won it. So it's not separate. And Aldis was there at Best in the World. Yeah, it's just, it's a mess. It's kind of messy right now. Things are really ill-defined. It's making things like basic match psychology really kind of muddy because we're not really sure what, like, the whole intent of it is. And that makes something like pulling off a guy's mask just kind of arbitrary and unnecessary and, like, not even really shocking, just kind of, like, oh, so they went there. Okay, I guess that's something that they do.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Like, I draw a lot of comparisons between comics and superheroes, not superheroes and wrestling. I think they're basically the same genre. And that's the thing. You'll have Spider-Man show up in Daredevil's series, and there might be a misunderstanding that leads to the two of them fighting temporarily. But despite the fact that it's Spidey showing up in Daredevil's series, Spidey is still a hero. He's still the same character that he is in the other series. He doesn't show up and they might fight due to misunderstanding, but he doesn't show up and kick Daredevil between the legs and pull Mary Jane in front of him as a shield and, you know, clock him in the head with a lead pipe or something, because that's not who he is. There's still that consistency of this person is a good person or a bad person or whatever. And that, yeah, it feels like that's kind of what's missing with Cody right now, is he's one person in ROH, a different one in New Japan, a different one on Being the Elite, a different one when the NWA is concerned. And it's just real, I don't know. It's hurting me figure out like what I'm supposed to feel. And
yeah, I mean, how, I have to ask this question too, and it's kind of complicated, but how much does Being the Elite affect this? Because I think that is partly part of the problem here. Also, that like ultimately with Being the Elite, they have to continue storylines consistently. So, you know, when a guy goes, you know, even as far as Cody did with this, you know, storyline with Kenny, they still have to figure out ways of keeping him in the story. And so for someone to be an absolute all-out heel villain in these stories, like, that's not really totally possible. So I think part of the problem is that you have a following of fans that are watching your wrestling performances, but they're also watching you in this like narrative-driven series that's kind of, you know, that's tangential, but also attached to these performances. So how much of this is trying to have our cake and eat it too?
I don't know. I don't have a solution to whatever all this is, but we've talked far longer about this match than the match actually was.
True.
So let's move on to something else. We open this week's show with a tag match, the first Women of Honor tag match on television this year.
Yeah, it kind of caught me off guard, actually, when they announced it as a tag match.
We had some on the Honor Club events. We've had a fair number on the live events, but this is the first time on television we saw Women of Honor tag. And it was another interesting one, because we'd been talking recently about how it kind of felt like the Women of Honor division was just Sumi, Tennille Dashwood, Kelly Klein, and Jenny Rose, for the most part. It felt like those four were the only four that we were seeing on a regular basis. And here we go. Here's some new blood. Still had Sumi. She's still the champ, and she's still getting some screen time and still looking great. So that's all positives in my book. She's teaming with the often missing in action Stella Gray. And they faced a couple of young rookies, Riley Shepard and Gabby Ortiz.
Yeah, I don't know much about these. I don't know much about Riley and Gabby other than that, you know, we were told through the commentary that they trained together at Monster Factory. But yeah, I thought they looked really good. We keep doing this when we see our guest talent on, especially Women of Honor, where we have these guests who come in and you see kind of what they're capable of doing, what they're capable of adding to the potentially fairly limited field of Women of Honor right now. And I felt like we were seeing yet another like positive, like potential addition. I don't know. I don't think that they said they were part of any particular promotion or another. But I thought in particular, Riley looked really good. Riley looked like she'd be right at home. right at home in the kind of like, you know, midsection of our Women of Honor talent pool. But I overall, like, the match was fine. I, you know, I give them credit for continuing to like put Sumi Sakai in a position where she just, you know, she looks as dominant as she clearly is. And I like seeing her tag with Stella because I haven't been like totally sold on Stella Gray. When I've seen her, I think she did a match. She might have done one of the matches in Pittsburgh, and I don't remember much about it at all. She tends to leave me kind of cold and just like general ring effect when it comes to solo matches, but I thought she held her own here in the tag match just fine. There were a couple of really good sequences here, a really good double clothesline on Ortiz and Shepherd that delivered by Sumi. But yeah, overall, I don't know. Your thoughts, Harley?
Yeah, it was a fine TV match. It didn't, you know, it didn't blow me away. It didn't knock down any doors. But I get the feeling that Stella, Riley, and Gabby are all relative rookies, relatively young. I mean, obviously compared to Sumi. Sumi probably has more experience than the three of them combined. Literally. But yeah, I thought it was fine for what it was. It, you know, it was a 6-minute match and it wasn't trying to steal the show or anything. It was just a nice showcase, and that's how people get better, right? That's how people improve and how they grow, is by giving them opportunities like this. So I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm definitely for it, especially if it's tag matches and not like even like 6-man or 8-woman or whatever. Like, it was nice to see an actual tag match from Women of Honor happen on a TV episode. It's a step in. It just is always nice to see them like liven up their TV offerings a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm all about like the last week and this week, we got some diversity. We got to see some people that we haven't seen recently or we don't get to see often. And that's always just a nice change of pace from seeing maybe the same people over and over.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, bringing back some of the other Women of Honor that we haven't gotten to see in a while. And obviously, you know, in a couple of weeks, we're going to get to see another match between Sumi and my favorite Karen Q. And I like them to repeatedly bring back some women we haven't seen in a while, because it reminds us that they actually have a deeper talent pool than we might assume when we are, like you were saying before, seeing the same faces over and over again, when it's always Tennille and Sumi and Kelly Klein and even Jenny Rose at this point. It's good to keep bringing back Women of Honor talent that aren't the faces we've been seeing over and over again.
And it establishes kind of a hierarchy. So we've got Sumi, Tennille, Kelly as like the main eventers. But then we've also got some like the mid-carders, which is always important for any division, whether it's men's or tag division or women or any others. So speaking of people who, you know, kind of missing in action for a while, kind of not getting as much screen time as we might want, Jonathan Gresham. We spoke about Jonathan Gresham last week. We kind of had a little bit of a discussion about what to do with him. Do you put him with Machine Guns? Reunite Search and Destroy for the 6-man division? Do you do something with Pickup? He was having like kind of a series with Jay Lethal, but he lost all the matches. So I guess that doesn't. It's hard to do a best of 7 series when the one person loses every match.
You have to have him win a couple, yes.
And against world champion Jay Lethal, probably not. Oh. So our listener, Brendan Bradley, one of our regular listeners, wrote in, and he has a pitch. And here's what it is. He says, "Hey guys, big fan of the podcast. Last week, you were talking about what to do with one of my favorite ROH stars, Jonathan Gresham. You're also talking about potential heels to match up with Jay Lethal. So I was thinking you can kill two birds with one stone, considering the great history of matches these men have. In regards to how I return Gresham heel, I'd make him a dark, heelish protege of the returning Bryan Danielson. Because, if I remember correctly, the commentators have said in the past that he reminds them of a young Bryan. However, what they fail to mention is that Bryan was the heel for the majority of his run on top, not the lovable star we grew into knowing today. This would lead to a new spark in his persona, gift a new dynamic for some excellent rematches against Jay now that he's champ. Not to mention, this can eventually build to Jay versus Bryan down the road as well, which I'm sure would be magnificent. So what do you guys think of this mini fantasy booking? Please get back to me, and I'm sorry it's long-winded. Keep up the good work, both of you."
Well, I think that if you're gonna go big, like, you know, go big or go home, right? Brendan, you are creating a fantasy booking scenario and you're going as big with it as possible. And I really appreciate that. I have, back when Harley and I were talking about best in the world, and Harley was daring to imagine a world where Dublin Castle retained his world title, I was a pessimist and too jaded, and I want to embrace what is possible. That being said, I think it's pretty clear we're not going to be seeing any Brian Danielson back in ROH anytime soon. That could always change. You know, wrestling is an interesting world, and having him come back as kind of a like mentor figure for someone like Jonathan Gresham would be a good use of a guy who, you know, I haven't been following very closely what Daniel Bryan has been able to do in the ring in his return to WWE, but I don't know. I mean, it still makes me kind of uncomfortable to see him take any kind of major bumps because of, you know, brain damage. So him coming back in kind of a mentorship role with limited wrestling might be really cool to see. But I feel like we are talking about a storyline that can't happen for a little while yet. And Jonathan Gresham is probably past the age where he can credibly be someone's protege in that direction. I don't know that I want to see a Gresham heel. I have seen him do such phenomenal work live as a face that I think we need to give him a better, we need to give him a better heel foil potentially, or at least one at like give him one in ROH. I think that that would be a better and more like potentially like efficient way to get Jonathan Gresham over. But I don't know. Harley, am I just being too jaded? Am I poo-pooing wonderful Brendan's like ideal scenario here? Am I just being a jerk?
Well, I will say this. There are rumors abounding that Daniel Bryan is finishing up his time in WWE in the very near future. As early as September or October, Daniel Bryan might be done with WWE. In which case, would he return to ROH in New Japan, do a kind of joint deal that some people do, like the Bucks? It's very possible, I guess. Bryan returning to ROH would be huge. Is there any chance that Daniel Bryan could get booed in 2018 or 2019? I don't envision that at all. They could still tempt Brendan's story. You know, you could have like a babyface Bryan mentoring a Gresham who slowly turns heel and gets arrogant over time. But yeah, I agree. Gresham seems like a natural babyface. I like your idea of bringing in a foil for Gresham. He needs like an arch rival. And it would be cool. His whole thing right now seems to be that he has this very distinct style in ROH. This pure submission, natural wrestling style that a lot of other people don't do. So if they were to find somebody with a similar style, but who was also just a big a-hole, that would be perfect. That would be, you know, the wrestling the evil version of yourself.
There is one man alone could handle this task at the moment, and that is New Japan Pro Wrestling's Zack Sabre Jr. Harley, are you familiar with Zack Sabre Jr.?
I know very little of his work, but I saw him in the WWE Cruiserweight Classic, and I don't know if he ever wrestled in ROH or not, but I know I've seen him a little bit. Is he a villain these days?
He is a heel. He is actually in New Japan Pro Wrestling. He is part of Minoru Suzuki's Suzuki Goon stable, which is a heel stable. And his proficiency is he is like the submission master. He is like a technical sadist. So if you take all of like the kind of face charisma of Gresham and you churn it into this like dark, sadistic, technical like wizardry, you have Zack Sabre Jr. I would love to see a match between these two guys. And I think, you know, regardless of whether you could get Zack Sabre Jr. or you got someone who had a very similar like aesthetic and like style, I think you're right. I think having Gresham go up against someone else who also has those technical abilities, the technical wrestling abilities, that submission abilities, that would be really interesting to see the compatibility of that style and how it differs when it's coming from a face versus coming from a heel. To see Sabre wrestle, he's doing a lot of the same type of submission work that you're going to see Gresham do, but with just that added bent of doing it as a heel. So the submissions are that much more nasty looking. They're held for that much longer. They're done in a spirit of like immediate destruction rather than as defensive and like in attempt to win. In the hands of Zack Sabre Jr., it looks with the intention to hurt.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Okay, so I like that. I mean, obviously, you'd want to pick, you'd want Gresham to be on like a, maybe not undefeated, but on a good streak before Sabre showed up and kind of tried to put him in his place. You'd want Gresham to be picking up a series of wins, which they could still do. You know, you could have him beating Will Ferrara and Rhett Titus and Josh Woods and even some future Honor guys along the way, if you wanted, and really selling the idea that he's just a submission expert and nobody has his number. Something's changed. And it could be something as simple, I don't know about, you know, a protege mentorship role, but a manager for Gresham could be great. Somebody charismatic who could really be in his corner and take credit for his new winning ways, whether it's Caprice Coleman or whether it's somebody from the return of Prince Nana or somebody like that. We've talked about this before too, about how there's no managers anymore in ROH really.
Yeah, it's actually funny that you're talking about this too, because Zack Sabre Jr. in New Japan Pro Wrestling has really taken off, not just because of his abilities, which are, completely, without a doubt, but, he has kind of a hype man manager in the form of Taka Michinoku, who comes out and does like a whole spiel about, he does a speech before every time Zack Sabre Jr. wrestles about how Zack Sabre Jr. is, the best, he's a submission master, that everybody is, afraid of Zack Sabre Jr. That whole element, that added element of presentation with ZSJ's performances in the ring really does add something really spectacular to just like his, his overall presence and his overall like carriage in New Japan Pro Wrestling and wrestling in general. So in his, career in pro wrestling. So I don't know. I see a lot of interesting parallels here to do that same thing, but like as a face for Gresham and ROH, I think there's a lot of ground to be covered. This is a point where ROH could learn something really effective from their partnership with New Japan Pro Wrestling.
There you go. As to what actually happens with Gresham, I don't know. I guess we'll have to see if anything happens with Gresham other than him showing up every once a month and having a nice match and losing.
Yes. I mean, again, I've said it before. I always enjoy seeing Jonathan Gresham, even although I know he will likely lose. I always enjoy seeing him. And if we're thinking about if you were going to do a series with him, you don't have to do Lethal. You could do Kenny King again. You could do like a 7 series with Kenny King.
Yeah, there's all sorts of people, other people who are looking for something substantial to do with their time as well.
Yes, there are.
So while we're doing this mail, while we're delving into the mailbag, let's answer another listener mail. This is Philip Bagley. He writes in, I had a little bit of a running thing on the show saying every week I was going to ask the question, where's Coast to Coast? Until I got an answer, and I might have an answer. Philip says, I was at the TV tapings in Fairfax, and Coast to Coast was there. LSG wrestled in what I thought I heard was a top prospect tournament match, but it was the first match of the night and it may have even been a dark match. I would assume that the match won't be on TV, but maybe on the YouTube channel at some point. Shaheem Ali didn't wrestle and didn't do much at ringside other than try to pump up the crowd for LSG's comeback. I wouldn't be shocked if he was injured. I'll take it. Still, like, no clear confirmation on the state of Coast to Coast, but a sighting is a sighting. It's possible that, Philip's explanation sounds likely, that maybe Shaheem Ali just has a bit of a nagging injury, and so LSU is out there wrestling a singles dark match just to get some in-ring time and remind the live crowd that they exist.
Yeah, and that LSG has signed with ROH. So, you know, while his tag partner might be out on injury, LSG is signed with ROH and will continue to wrestle for ROH, you know, however conceivably long his contract is. So, you know, it's good that they're making use of him. And yeah, I'm glad to know that they're around. I hope for a speedy recovery, because I would like to see Coast to Coast as a tag team again.
Yes, and your big, your recurring question every week has been about the Motor City Machine Guns.
Yes!
And Chris Sabin is confirmed for a four-corner survival match next week at Honor for All.
I did see that.
So, there you go. All our questions are being answered. The Machine Guns exist. Coast to Coast exist. There are more women in the Women of Honor division than we realized. There's all sorts of... We even got... I mean, maybe one of our listeners was asking themselves, where's Ryan Nova? Whatever happened to that guy? Even he made an appearance on TV this week.
He did, yeah. With another...
He got literally shook down for money.
Oh, poor Ryan Nova. Every time I see Ryan Nova in ROH, I mean, that's, you know, the only time I ever see Ryan Nova, he's being beat up by some pretty, like, low-card guys. So, yeah. Seeing him shook down for cash from the dogs. And of course, he only has $6. Oh, poor baby.
That's what it's the life of Future Bonner. You don't have, I'm sure wrestling boots cost a fair amount of money. I'm sure, you know, training costs something. So it's understandable.
Yeah.
But yeah. We got a couple of developments on the six-man gauntlet front this week. So next week on TV, it's this five trios entering a gauntlet match, with the winners earning a shot at the six-man tag team titles sometime in the future. So we got a bit of a part two to last week. Last week we saw the dogs trying to get Shane Taylor to be the partner, but he said, you have no money, leave me alone. So this week they were trying to rob Ryan Nova in order to steal all of Ryan Nova's money in order to pay Shane Taylor, but Nova had no money. So the question remains of, will the dogs be in the gauntlet next week? Will they team with Shane Taylor next week? Will Taylor team with... Is there anybody in ROH right now who's, like, known for being pretty rich? Could Taylor show up teaming with them instead?
I mean, we know that the... Well, like, who...
Nobody makes Young Bucks money, so...
Seriously, right? And they're not gonna partner with Shane Taylor. They have, you know, too many Bullet Club guys to choose from. And, you know, non-BC guys if they want to go with Flip. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it would have been way funnier. It was reasonably funny, them, the dogs beating up Ryan Nova. But I thought it would be way funnier if maybe they extended the bit for, like, 20 seconds and just showed them, like, beating up a lot of, like, low-card guys, like, prospect guys, just shaking down every single one of them and, like, counting out, like, quarters and dollar bills and, you know, getting $6 from Ryan Nova and, you know, $17 from Eli Isom, and, you know, just, you know, really rating the low card in ROH talent.
What do you have against the low card guys?
I have nothing against
that
them.
That you want to see the dogs beat them all up.
I just think it would have been funny.
All right.
I am on record as saying that I want to see more Eli Isom because he is the cutest puppy in the puppy pile. But in the meantime, if they're not going to use him, you know, in ring as effective talent, you know, put him in a promo being, you know, shaken down for cash from the dogs. The dogs need their money to pay off Shane Taylor, and they need beer money.
Well, maybe next week. There's still time. We could get a third dogs vignette or dogs little backstage segment before the gauntlet match.
Yes. To see how far they came and to be able to afford Shane Taylor.
Also on the six-man front, we got a little backstage thing with Christopher Daniels and Scorpio Sky. SoCal and Censored are going to be in this match. Five trios in this match. SoCal and Censored, Silas Young, Beer City Bruiser, and Brian Malonis. So, hey, Malonis, another person who's been missing in action, he'll be back.
Hey!
And then three mystery teams, and that'll be interesting for sure, because there aren't really any other established trios in ROH right now. You got, like, I don't foresee anyone from Bullet Club being in this match. The Young Bucks already have tag titles, and I can't see Cody, Skrull, and Paige teaming up for this thing. And beyond that, yeah, I don't know. Nobody jumps to mind for me as, oh, here's like here's some people who are friends and they could easily team up for this sort of thing. Kenny King Coast to Coast was the only one that came to mind, but that seems doubtful now too with Coast to Coast status.
Yeah, I don't know. I it's a head scratcher. All the things I, you know, could predict are more like things that I want rather than actually, you know, foresee as a reasonable option. So I don't know. It'll be exciting. It's fun to see. It's fun to have a mystery.
Yeah, I like not knowing who's going to be in the match, but I am, without knowing the five teams in the match, I'm still going to go on the record as saying one of those three mystery teams is going to win, and they're going to be our next six-man tag team champions.
Oh, okay. You think it's going to go that far? Okay.
I don't know who it is, but whoever wins the titles at Death Before Dishonor. That's my early prediction.
Well, it's going to be the Dogs and Shane Taylor.
It's going to be the Dogs and Caprice. No, not not BJ. BJ was out here on TV this week lecturing Caban about getting involved.
Yeah. Maybe we should move on to that.
Well, there was one more thing on the six-man front. I don't know if we... If we want to talk about it. I've been on the topic of stuff that's been like a while since we've seen it. Coleman's Pulpit returned. And at first I was like, cool. Like I enjoy Coleman's Pulpit generally. And I was happy to see it return, I thought. And I'm a fan of Caprice, usually. But I hated everything about this segment. Every single thing about it. Emily, what about you?
So I don't get it. I don't get what this was. Were they trying to do like a Tim and Eric awesome show type of sketch? Is that what Coleman's Pulpit is? This is not what Coleman's Pulpit has always been like, right?
Usually it's him kind of being like passive aggressive towards his guests, and then his guests get annoyed. But they still manage to like put over their guests' accomplishments at the same time. This was, I don't know. We had Vinny drinking wine out of a balloon, squirting wine out of a balloon into his hand and then slurping it up. You had TK Orion just laughing hilariously in the background. You had Caprice telling this weird meandering story about a rich kid who wrecks his parents' car and gets a new van and then has to drive his siblings around but pimps out his van, and Taven took offense. We got a dueling Melvin Jive Turkey argument. It was just, I hated everything about this. And it made me like, no, it just made me not want to see Coleman's Pulpit again.
Yeah.
And I was a fan before this.
Yeah, are they trying to like turn Caprice Coleman into like the ROH wrestling version of Steve Brule? Like, I didn't get any of this. It was awkward and stilted, and I think it was supposed to be awkward and kind of played for that like awkward, like cringe humor, but and its timing in the show is so weird too, because it's coming after the Cheeseburger and Bully Ray match and like before the main event, and it was 5 minutes of my life that I feel like I could have been spending doing anything better.
Yeah, I think I didn't hate the Kingdom. There was a period when I didn't hate them. There's a period when I was indifferent, and now I think I actively dislike them.
I can deal with Matt Taven on his own, like, heelishness, like, independently. I cannot stand the other two guys. I can't stand them in ring, and I'm not digging them anywhere else, not in ring, especially Vinny, who, I don't know, just thinking of the wine from the balloon, just, I'm so grossed out.
But they're heels, and we hate them. So isn't that a good thing?
Is this the right kind of heel? Like, we talk about this with, like, the Bully Ray stuff, too. Is like, there's heels and that we love to hate you. And then there's heels where we're like, we're tired of you and don't want to see you anymore.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Yeah, I don't know, because it's, I mean, are we being, like, are people listening to this now and saying, okay, but you were just complaining because, like, Marty and Cody's a heel, but, like, he still, like, is fun and the fans cheer. Like, the fans aren't cheering TK and Vinny. So, success, right?
No, because I think that that would be a easy comparison to make, but that's a false comparison, because we're not saying that, like, we want Cody to pick one because, like, we're not saying that he should be a good guy or he should be a heel. We're saying he should pick one because it's a better, stronger choice for him to kind of pick a lane and stick with it. If he wants to be a heel, he's a really good heel and he's really engaging as a heel, and he's not a heel in the way that, like, he's an actual heel and not just, like, kind of a tired presence on screen that we're, like, done with, that is, like, that we're finding tedious more than we are finding, like, I don't hate the kingdom. I'm tired of the kingdom. I'm bored by the kingdom. I'm especially bored by TK and Vinny. I'm bored of the tedium of, like, the conspiracy stuff. I'm tired of everyone being called Melvins. I'm tired of the balloons. I'm tired of all of that. It's not like I hate it. I don't hate it with this, like, fierce passion that I hated Cody when, like, he, like, did all those weird, like, sexual mind games on Kota Ibushi in New Japan. Like, I'm not – that added actual, like, visceral hatred. With Kingdom, it's just, like, I'm done. I'm tired of it. Like, come on, guys. I'm just, like, no. Like, go away. That's why last week was so great to see Taven wrestle on his own because – well, you know, for the most part. Because it's just nice to see Taven do stuff that's not the same wheelhouse that he's always doing that he's stuck in when he's with Vinny and TK. So, no, I would say to that person who, you know, called us hypocrites, like, you're missing the point. The point is not that, like, we hate them and they're being effective heels. The point is that we're tired of this. It's kind of mundane at this point, and it's not entertaining. It's not entertaining in a face way. It's not entertaining in a heel way. It's not entertaining. And that's, you know, ultimately, you want to be sold a narrative that you buy into and that you're compelled to keep following. And this is not a narrative that we're compelled to keep following.
Well, rest assured, they won't be six-man champions for much longer.
That is true. But
if my prediction is correct.
But I mean, even sidestepping the whole Kingdom issue, what is ROH doing with Caprice Coleman's pulpit? What was this? Why was this? What happened?
I don't know. They wanted to promote the Gauntlet match in some way. So why not bring back the pulpit for that purpose?
It felt like they needed to fill time, and this was, like, the quickest thing that they could do. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like there was awkward humor in the past with Coleman's pulpit, but this was, like, kind of beyond awkward into, like, genuine cringe territory.
Well, to each their own, I guess. maybe somebody loved this. Maybe somebody was like, that was hilarious.
Tell us.
That was so fun.
Yes, email your adoration of this, Tim and Eric.
TalkingHonor@gmail.com with the subject line wine balloon.
Maybe you're a huge fan of, like, 2007 era Adult Swim comedies. Please tell us all about how you think that this was a genius comedy bit.
Yes. Oh man, I'm blanking. What was that show with the like the talking milkshake and hamburger?
Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
There you go. I was trying to make some sort of transition from your reference to Aqua Teen Hunger Force to Cheeseburger versus Bully Ray.
Very, very slick.
And I failed because I blanked on that.
No way. We'll edit it in post. Super slick reference, Harley.
Wow. So timely. So topical. Speaking of Space Ghost Coast to Coast, it's Bolivian Cheeseburger. So this, you know, this, I almost feel like this should have been the main event of the show. I can understand not wanting it to be because it ends with the villain standing tall. But it did anyway. It ended with Cody standing tall after pulling a bunch of nonsense on his end. So, same effect. But I thought this was the highlight of the show. I mean, it was not. It was long, but it was so engaging. And for all the complaints people have made about Bully Ray in the past, and people have made a lot of complaints, obviously. The noise. When Colt Cabana tackled Bully Ray, was that, like, that alone, that made up for the past 6 months of Bully Ray's booking, in my opinion. It was just, it was enormous. The pop when Cabana finally threw down the headset and stormed the ring and tackled him. And then when Cheeseburger came off the top with the cheese grater to the groin and the fans were chanting Cheeseburger, Cheeseburger over and over, like, that, I was on the edge of my seat for that, for that, for those moments. I was just as engaged as anybody else.
Yeah, I was genuinely surprised by how much intensity and actual engagement they were able to bring out of what has become a pretty monotonous storyline. We knew they were, we were going to get something a little different because they had added the stipulations of no DQ and of no countouts. So we knew that they were going to have to play with that a little bit more. They're going to have to be more inventive with how they were going to work this match. Bringing in Colt, as we saw in Best of the World, has been a huge shot in the arm to this storyline, because ultimately what we needed was someone who was going to be kind of more in line with Bully Ray's, like, age demographic and even size demographic than the young guys that he's been picking on. So I've been really pleased with how they were able to work that. Again, like, I have problems with the finish. I kind of wish Cheeseburger had been given the win here. And it would be nice to see someone get the win on Bully Ray so that we can, like, maybe take a pause in the storyline. But overall, I was kind of shocked at how good it was. And I think it is a testament to the power of that crowd at the Hammerstein Ballroom that, like, they ate every minute of this match up. That pop for Colt was huge, but they were popping from the very beginning. Cheeseburger got a huge amount of crowd support when he came out. They were primed and prepped and ready for this match. And I think that their energy really did infuse a lot more excitement. It just goes to show you, it's a classic rule with the wrestling matches that, like, the crowd energy gives back to the match so much. So they benefited, all the guys, Bully and Cheeseburger and Colt and every single person in that ring really benefited from having the crowd as engaged as they were.
I will say for the first third of the match, the crowd was annoying me for the same reason as my go back to my babyface heel things. Bully comes out and low blows Burger from behind to start the match. And as he's roughing up Cheeseburger at ringside, the fans are chanting ECW, ECW. And as he's picking on Cheeseburger in the ring, the fans are chanting, "We want tables." And I'm thinking, you just showered Cheeseburger with streamers. There were so many streamers for Cheeseburger's entrance. That made me think that, hey, you like Burger and you're on his side. So now why are you chanting, why are you cheering for Bully? Why are you encouraging Bully to get a table and put Burger through a table if you're on his side? And, like, what, like, I get Bully's from New York area, so I understood that part. That at that time, I was annoyed with all the cheers and the chanting for Bully Ray on his behalf. But once Cabana hit the ring, it became a fully 100% we're with the team of Cabana Burgers, and we're not with the team of Bully Ray.
Yeah, it was a bit, I mean, I talk about the energy from the crowd, and the crowd was really into the match, but you're right, there definitely was, like, a kind of confusion muddle of who they were in support of. And that can bother me too, because I think it can mess with the psychology of a match. I think it can be kind of, you know, it can be disorienting, and it can lead to some, like, spots not working as well. I think it didn't really have that effect on this match. I think it's still the match worked regardless of where the crowd was standing at any given moment. But I can see why that concerned you, because it does mess with the psychology a little bit, because you need the crowd to kind of pick sides so that you can understand motivations throughout, like, the turns and the actions. So, but once Cabana appeared, as you said, it was all gravy because they were 100% behind Cole.
Oh, yeah. And I like that it... Sometimes you'll see in wrestling matches or things like this, somebody will come out for the save or come out and interfere, and it'll raise the logistical question of, like, okay, why at this point? The match has been going on for 10 minutes. Why at this random interval did this guy decide to interfere when the match could have ended 6 minutes ago? And we didn't have that issue here. Cabana dropped the headset and hit the ring when Bully attacked Todd Sinclair.
Yeah.
He was picking on Cheeseburger, when he was hurting Burger. Oh, yeah, we can't, aside from Cabana's actual any involvement, which is terrific, up until that point, Cabana and Riccaboni on commentator were pitch perfect here. I mean, I feel like we praise those two a lot as a commentary team. They're my favorite commentary team in wrestling. But they, like, Ian is, from the start, was, like, pleading with the production booth, can we go to commercial? Can we just, like, just go to commercial, just to cut the cameras, because I just don't want to show this. And Cabana, even from the start, was saying, like, Bully is disgusting. This, like, he's a coward. He's a little man doing this kind of BS. Like, they were great in really selling Bully Ray as just being this monster.
Yeah, but...
And then...
Yeah, the two different times where Ian kind of, you know, pleads for the show to go to commercial so that, you know, this is not on air anymore. Really effective psychology there. Again, it kind of made up for the fact that the crowd was kind of, you know, disparate in their attentions and a little confusing in that way. I feel like Ian and Cole had a nice, like, were able in their commentary to deliver the running thread that we needed that we maybe weren't getting from the crowd.
And yeah, and even like the Cabana's involvement comes about because the commentators are quick to say that, you know, it's no DQ or no count out, but referee Todd Sinclair can use his discretion to end the match at any time, right? Referee stoppage is always a viable finish. And it looked like he was going to do just that, which is what pissed off Bully and led to Bully attacking Sinclair. And once he put his hands on the official, that was it for Colt. He said he had seen enough. So he storms the ring. He tackles Bully to, like, one of the biggest pops I've heard in a while. He clotheslines Bully with his own chain, I think it was. Or was it the Singapore game?
Chain.
With a chain. And, yeah, all great. Bully takes the chest bump through the table because Burger moves. And we think that's the finish. And then Ray kicks out and... Nobody was expecting that. I wasn't expecting that. I thought that was the finish.
Yeah, I thought so too. And I would not have been disappointed by that finish. I do think I would have preferred that finish to Ray being able to sneak out another win with a roll up. I just want to take, like, if you're going to pause the story at any point, this is probably a good place to pause. You're on a high note. You're actually having people riveted by your match for once. It's not just Bully Ray coming out and, like, you know, yelling at the crowd and getting some cheap heat. Like, we're actually into this now. You've done a really good job, ROH. You've actually managed to, like, turn this, like, you know, shitty sedan into a sweet ride. Like, maybe let's park it for a little while so we don't run it out of gas. And I think that a Cheeseburger win would have done that.
Well, I'm guessing the idea is Bully and Cheeseburger are done now. Like, Cheeseburger's role in this story is over. He was, you know, he was the low level, not, I don't know, is there a hero equivalent of a henchman or a goon? He was like the sidekick to the main hero who will come along later. But I think Burger's role is done, and now it's either Ray and Cabana, or maybe Flip Gordon is still involved in this. It was kind of, going in with the no DQ stipulation, I kind of thought it might be something as simple as Flip comes out and gets involved and Flip and Burger manage to steal a win on Bully. But we didn't get any Flip Gordon here. So, I don't know. Is he still involved in the story with Ray, or is that a one-time thing just for Best in the World?
I don't know. That's a really good question. And I'm kind of torn as to what I would prefer. I like the direction that they're heading with having Colt as a potential foil for Bully Ray. And I would like to see them pay a bit more attention to that, and maybe a little less attention to feuds, to just empty kind of back and forth feuds with guys like Flip Gordon and Cheeseburger. I think that you're going to get a little bit more, as represented by this match last night. Like, I think you get a little bit more when you have a guy who's a bit more evenly matched against Bully Ray and who is not like significantly younger than him, but can like be the, you know, the vet on the scene who maybe is fighting for the side of like the new wave of wrestling rather than, you know, the, you know, whatever Bully Ray is doing.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
That was my other thinking coming away from this. I'm a huge Colt Cabana fan in general, but the reaction he got from the crowd and getting to see him like angry and fired up. He's great in his comedy role, obviously, but getting to see him do something meaty for once, like come out here and have like a story with teeth, something that you could really work with. All I could think was, if ROH doesn't let Colt wrestle regularly for them, or even like part-time here and there when the story calls for it, I feel like they're really dropping the ball here, because how many other people have gotten this kind of reaction lately?
No, not many. And I think it's a testament to like how useful he is as a counter to Bully Ray in this particular storyline. Like I joke that he is history's greatest monster, but Colt Cabana deserves to be the good guy in this. And I think he makes a really compelling good guy when you put him up against Bully Ray, because, you know, Bully Ray is a complicated bad guy, could be a complicated heel. So far, it has not been played complicatedly, but he could be more complex. And I think giving him someone like Colt to work against might actually be able to bring out the better aspects of the storyline that we have yet to see.
Yeah, like I am not confident that we'll see Ray and Cabana in a singles match in the future. I don't know. It feels like maybe this was just the moment to get that big reaction, and Colt goes back to commentary and Ray goes on to picking on somebody else. I don't know. And then, well, we got the extra level with, not only did Ray attack Todd Sinclair and shove Paul Turner after the match, he also had a bit of a thing with Kerry Silken at ringside.
Yeah, he attacked the timekeeper's table. Like, there's, you know, it's basically like whatever's in his way, he's just going to go after. I feel like that's one of my problems with the Bully Ray story. And this is also one of the problems I had with, like, you know, whenever any of the guys go berserk and they just start attacking every single person, it's like, you know, Bully Ray has a focused point for his vitriol, and that is specifically on like the young guys in wrestling, the, like, you know, the young boys that he like despises because of how they, you know, misrepresent and wrestling and how they are everything that is wrong with wrestling today. But to take that same anger and then direct it like all over the board to the point where you're like throwing down at the timekeeper's table, like, that to me is just, we're starting to get into like nonsense anger, and that's fine for brief bursts, but that's like more and more the road that they're taking with Bullet, just pushing it further and further into the realm of caricature, to the point where it's like we are losing the thread even on his like main thrust of his story, which has been so repetitive we shouldn't have to like strain to remember it. But when he does things like attack the officials and attack the timekeeper, it's like I don't really get why that's part of it.
Well, and then raises the question of like how long why is management letting this continue? You know, he was already like he's going around beating up people from behind and low blowing people. He had a thing with Joe Koff. Now he's got a thing with Kerry Silken. He's attacking the referees. Like, how long are they just going to be like, well, whatever, it's Bully Ray? We've had no explanation as to why nobody from ROH management has done anything, why they haven't fined him or suspended him or fired him or hired a new enforcer to do something. So that feels like a loose end that they can't leave that too much longer, because then it just makes ROH management look totally weak and ineffectual that they're letting this stuff happen.
Yeah, and we already saw him get fired. So why is he still around?
He got fired as enforcer, which meant he could just wrestle instead.
Great.
Yeah. So if you're working at your office job and you get fired, grab a mop, start working as a janitor, and there's nothing they can do about it.
You know, like you can't fire me from all positions. It's just like one very specific position.
Yeah. And yeah, so all of that. But then and we have like a little bit of a postscript to this whole segment where we see BJ Whitmer, who is another face for the backstage office now. He was at ringside kind of essentially saying to Colt Cabana, all right, you got to leave the ringside area. You're a commentator. You're not supposed to get involved in this sort of thing. That's a thread that I actually appreciate. That goes back a long ways. I mean, a year or two ago, we had the same thing with Whitmer. We had him terrorizing Steve Corino when Corino was on commentary, and Corino couldn't put his hands on Whitmer. And then he finally did, and as a result, he got suspended for months as a result of being a commentator who got involved physically. So there's an instance of management doing the right thing. You know, it's not the right thing. We want to see Cabana do this, but management enforcing their own rules. Rules are, Colt, we hired you as a commentator. You're here to commentate, not be in the ring. So they're willing to enforce that rule, but Ray's allowed to like whip the referee with his steel chain and nobody cares.
Yeah, there is. Obviously, rules in wrestling are made to be broken. They are often broken. They're just shattered on a repeat. But there is a beauty in having rules in place so that, you know, there is tension for those who have to kind of work within those rules. And commentators, you know, official commentators, they very much do have to be mindful of like what is and isn't appropriate conduct, because they are part of the brand in a different way than the wrestlers are. So that's a fun world to play with. And BJ being kind of the voice of concern as far as like what you are and are not allowed to do as a voice of that brand is compelling. It's a compelling force, like this kind of like force neutrality where you're encountering a situation that requires a bit more action than reaction.
Maybe this is building to a big Colt Cabana and Josh Barnett versus Bully Ray and Jay White.
Yes, that's exactly what is happening. That's going to be the big...
It's the revenge of the commentators who have had enough.
That was a great moment.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, we're left with a question mark of where they go from here with Bully, whether it's with Flip or Cabana, or they involve somebody else. But I'm kind of invested in this now, I guess. I'm invested in Colt, and he's given Bully the rub. So I guess that's something.
I am pleased that they managed to do this as well as they did, and would love to see a furthering of this story potentially in like a month's time. Let's take a breather, everyone. Good work. Job well done. High fives all around. Let's take a beat. Take a few weeks off from this. Let, you know, Bully Ray, like, you know, go cool off and, you know, beat up some chairs or walls or young guys, whatever. And like, let's come back to this in some time when we can like maybe play with a feud beyond just, you know, what we're doing. Cause they did well here. I want them to use this as taking a pause on this storyline when they've hit a high note.
Well, good luck with that, because Honor for All is intense.
I know.
Yes, our next event is Honor for All on Honor Club, July 20th, Nashville, Tennessee. We've got a bunch of matches announced for that. Nick Aldis versus Flip Gordon for the NWA title. That's a new one.
That is...
That was announced today. This is Flip's chance to become NWA champion and go all in against Cody.
My gosh, Flip should win the title, so they have to let him in at all in.
Yeah, he'll find a way to get into that. Maybe, All right, I got an idea for Flip showing up at
okay.
All.
Okay.
and involves a certain business man.
Oh, all right.
The ultimate betrayal, Flip on Cody, as Flip as Bernard.
Oh, yeah, can you just imagine that reveal? Bernard and Brandy arm in arm. Bernard's head comes off, there he is. There he is, Flip Gordon.
Yeah, what if Brandy and Bernard were like mid-smooch or something at the time?
They're just friends, Harley. Just best friends.
Okay. Sure. Also, Honor for All, Punishment and Scorpio Sky for the TV title. Some new matches. Kenny King, Shane Taylor, Jonathan Gresham, and Chris Sabin in a four-corner survival match.
Love it. So thrilled.
Well, your question about the future of the Machine Guns, ROHWrestling.com lists this as a battle of four people, kind of interest with eyes on the TV title.
Interesting. So we're going to see a potential solo run?
I guess if Saban's got his eyes on the TV title, I don't know where Alex Shelley's eyes are.
Where is Alex Shelley right now? Like, what is he?
I don't know. That's the new mystery. Now that Malonis and Coast to Coast and... all these other people have resurfaced. Where's Alex Shelley?
Yeah.
We demand answers.
Alex Shelley, account for yourself. Tell us where you are.
He's hanging out with Chuck E. T. somewhere.
You know, he could be, you know, potentially teasing a reunion with Kushida. And they'll reunite the time splitters.
The time splitters? Yep.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was the joke during Best of Super Juniors that, you know, when Chris Sabin and Kushida eventually had their match, it was going to be a match for who got custody of Alex Shelley.
Oh, just like when Chuck E. T. and Rocky Romero battled for Beretta's
part. Yeah, exactly. We know how that worked out.
Yep. All right, so Honor for All is in 10 days. We'll talk about that some more on next week's episode, maybe go through the card in its entirety. As it is, I think we're done for this week.
Yep. I want to give a really quick shout out, though, if it's okay. At New Japan Pro Wrestling, at the G1 special, one of our favorite recurring guests onto ROH, whenever they've done War of the Worlds and other New Japan Pro Wrestling crossovers, wrestler Hiromu Takahashi, New Japan Pro Wrestling's IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion currently, was injured after his match with Dragon Lee. So hopefully we are hoping for your speedy recovery, Hiromu. I know that he's not listening to this, but I need to put it out there in the world.
Yes, we never want anybody to get seriously injured, especially not somebody as beloved among cats and humans.
Yes, alike. Hopefully he is surrounded by friends, both animate and inanimate, and lots of his cat friends. So hopefully
he has 9 lives.
I'm positive he has even more than that. But yeah, so speedy recovery to Hiromu Takahashi.
Yes. Next week on ROH Television, it's the gauntlet match to crown new number one contenders to the 6-man titles. That'll be, I'm very much looking forward to that one.
Yes. I'll say.
I'm very intrigued and I'm very excited to see how that unfolds. You can find me on Twitter at Talking Honor. You can reach us here at the show, talkinghonor@gmail.com. If you have seen Alex Shelley recently,
yeah,
please write.
Tell us what he's up to, if he's doing okay.
Emily is on Twitter at
PGH, FORKED, PGH, and yeah, you can find me there.
Okay, thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back next week for the gauntlet.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.